6. Success philosophy number 3. Tell stories and connect through feeling. I first met Michael Moreno at an Arizona State University football game. From that moment, it was instantly clear to me that we were opposite human beings. He was quiet and I was, well, not quiet. He seemed to have it all together and owned his own home while I was in a place where I lived with my mom like a boss. To be fair, those were just a few character-building months for me when I worked two jobs to save for my own place and to keep my mind off the fact that I was living at home with my mom as a grown adult. Still, he seemed nice, so I said yes when he asked me out. Soon we were dating, but I couldn't shake the feeling that something was missing. Even after that Applebee's date I described in the previous chapter, I felt like it wasn't getting to that real Michael show when we were together. Not to keep my thoughts and desires inside when it came to my dating life, I let Michael know, hey, I need you to just be you and stop being so nervous around me. Can you just like be the version of you that you really are so that we can see if this is actually going to work for us? Because if not, I have to move along. You're hot, but you're too nice. True story. I just said what I needed to say, and in a truly un-Michael move, he responded by telling me he wasn't going to let me walk away. He asked me to give him some time to open up a bit. Ladies, you hang on after a line like that, right? So hot. On our next date, Michael and I got into conversation about embarrassing stories, and he told me in detail a story that forever changed the way I thought about him. He convinced me to go from, this probably won't work because I'm going to steamroll this poor man, to, I'm marrying this dude in just a few minutes. Somebody find me a justice of the peace and a white dress because it is on. Allow me to share with you the story that sold me a marriage. It's the best story in the book, so buckle up. The story goes that when Michael was around 20 years old, he went to dinner with his mom and his older sister to a Mexican restaurant near where they lived in Arizona. The thing about Mexican food in Arizona is that it's everywhere, even in strip malls. And this particular night, they had decided to give the strip mall restaurant the green light. Already, I can feel some of you knowing where this is going to go based on my keywords, Mexican food and strip mall in the same sentence. You're right, but it's so much worse than you're thinking. Following dinner, which I can only imagine was a real winner, Michael's mom and sister decided to hit up the Target nearby. They asked if he'd like to come with them, and because he's a guy and doesn't understand the miracle that is Target, he opted to sit in the car and wait the 7 hours it would take, he assumed, for his mom and sister to finish their shopping. I get it. I can legit spend hours in my local Target, even if I already know every item that's in that store. And I do. Please don't judge me. Michael then proceeded to pull out his man card, set it on the dash of his car, and park in the one parking space that was zoned in a different city. Do your husbands do this? Why? Why are they parking 5 football fields away from the entrance when there's a perfectly good space within spitting distance of the store? I do not understand this phenomenon, but I'm told I'm not the only one. Anyway, about 3 minutes after the family enters the store, Michael experienced an old familiar feeling, one we've all felt at one time or another, that sudden drop in the gut, followed by cramping that feels like the jaws of life are ripping out your insides. It's a feeling you really don't want to have when you're sitting in a car miles away from a bathroom. He did this to himself. When the situation went from minor issue to DEFCON 6 in 3.5 seconds, Michael knew he had two choices. Choice one, he could sit in the car and let what's about to happen happen. He could then face his mother and sister and try to explain all the way home, which was 30 minutes away. Can you imagine that car ride home? Choice two, he could slide out of the car and make a run for the doors of Target where the bathroom awaited. He picked choice number two and did the butt-clenched, knees-together run towards the store. You know the one. Sweat was dripping down his bright red face as he finally reached the door to the Target bathroom. Now, I don't know about you, but when you really have to go to the bathroom and your brain locks in on a bathroom, things get real serious. Your body knows it's go time and you're powerless to stop what's about to happen. Michael was frantically undoing his belt and pants as he kicked open the stall door. He turned around without even thinking about locking the door and bent at the waist to pull down his drawers. But before he could make the transition from bending to sitting, his body pulled a move that I lovingly refer to as wall splatter. He looked back in sheer panic and then relief as he noticed there was a clean break and not a spot had gotten on him. At least he didn't think it had. At that point in the story, Michael was telling me I was crying with laughter, imagining the whole thing going down. But it didn't end there. No, ma'am. As Michael told it, he now realized he had another two choices. Choice one, he could stay in the stall and attempt a cleanup. Choice two, he could pull a switcheroo and move to the next stall to finish his business and check out the damage. Because the prospect of choice one threatened to send him into full-blown panic attack, he went with choice two. With his pants around his ankles, he shuffled over to the next stall. He was making sure there was no shrapnel to be found on his clothes when, at that very moment, like a gift from Jesus, the guy who used to clean the bathrooms at Target walked in the room. It took 3 seconds for Michael's worst nightmare to become a reality. He could hear the Target employee freaking out. Oh my gosh! Oh, it's so disgusting! I'm not cleaning this! Holy mother, it's on the ceiling! At this point, Michael's faced with yet another two choices. Choice one, he can own the situation and apologize and try to make it right. This would not be a man I could marry. Or choice two, he could become my future husband and pass the blame on someone else. Like a man truly worthy of marriage, he responded to the young employee by saying, "Yeah, man, that's disgusting. Someone should clean that up." He zipped up his pants, washed his hands, and strolled out of that Target like nothing happened. It was that exact moment when Michael finished sharing that amazingly real, horrible experience with me that I knew I could marry him. Because he was willing to reveal the real him, because his story was bad and he told it to me anyway. And not only did Michael tell it to me, he now lets me tell the entire world because he knows this story can actually do something great. If this story can sell me on a marriage, I know your stories can sell the product or service that's resting in your soul and won't let you go. So let's talk about stories. I want to help you connect what we know about being authentic and what we know about why people buy products. I want to make it abundantly clear to you that the way to get people to buy into your business is by being who you really are and telling real, authentic stories about yourself and the products or service that you're offering. The five parts of a good story. For centuries, we've known that a good story has been made up of the same five components. Originally identified by the ancient Greek philosopher and scientist Aristotle, these components have stood the test of time. Great storytellers throughout history, from Homer to Shakespeare to J.K. Rowling, have created amazing works of art by employing these five simple components in the right order. Number one, exposition. The opening of the story, where the storyteller introduces some of the characters and a conflict, sets the stage for what's about to happen. Number two, rising action. This is where the character or characters meet the conflict. Number three, climax. Suspense and emotion build as the characters take action to resolve the conflict. Number four, falling action. Have you noticed how short a story usually is once a climax is reached? I often have thought, how is this author going to end this book with only 4 pages left? That's because the rising action and the climax make up the bulk of the story. The falling action is just not as exciting and can usually be summed up in fewer words than rising action. It consists of events that lead to the final resolution of the conflict. Number five, resolution. Here the storyteller ties everything up with a bow for the audience. When I invest my time in watching a movie and one of these components is missing in the storytelling, I can always tell. It's that feeling you get walking out of a theater that the story wasn't quite finished, that something was missing, or the story just wasn't as satisfying as you thought it could have been. I find this especially true when the movie doesn't have a strong resolution, when there's been all this buildup and then there's nothing to help me tie it all together. I don't want to have to make up the ending. I want the storyteller to give it to me. Remember that. Your audience wants you to wrap everything up for them in a perfect little package and tell them what to do next. As you use stories to tell your customers about your business, do this for them and don't be afraid to ask for what you want at the end. I would be remiss if I didn't reference Donald Miller when I talk about storytelling. Miller is the author of amazing books such as Scary Close and Building a Story Brand, and is one of my favorite online mentors who has no idea who I am. He has studied the art of storytelling as it applies to marketing and has come up with what he calls a brand script, where he basically follows the five components of great storytelling but adds a few pieces to help clarify the message so the audience doesn't end up confused about what the storyteller is trying to communicate. He also shows how all effective marketing itself is basically a form of storytelling. These steps to his brand script, which he says almost every good movie follows, can be summed up in a single sentence. I've added some parenthetical comments to show how this can apply to storytelling in your own business. Number one, a character, your customer, has a problem, wants or needs something, and meets a guide, you, who gives her a plan, your product or service, and calls her to action to buy your products or service, that helps her avoid failure, what happens if she doesn't have your product, and ends in success. Customer is happy with the purchase. Miller references epic film series such as Harry Potter, Star Wars, and The Hunger Games, and even fun movies like Tommy Boy, to show how closely most good stories conform to this pattern. I want you to get comfortable with the idea of storytelling as a marketing tool, both online and in person. That means at times, you'll be writing out your story, and at times, you'll be presenting them live. Start by working on telling a story in a casual way when you're interacting with friends and see how they react. Do they laugh when you're explaining it? What about their follow-up questions? It doesn't have to always be about your product. Find ways to weave stories into anything you're talking about rather than rattling off facts and figures. How to explode your brain. If you've been alive in the last 10 years, you've probably heard of TED Talks. And if you've watched even one of them online, you've likely seen Simon Sinek's talk on Starting With Why. It's called How Great Leaders Inspire Action. While the production quality isn't great, the subject matter blew my mind when I first heard it. It's been translated into 47 different languages and has been viewed nearly 40 million times on the TED website alone. Sinek wrote a book about the same topic called Start With Why, which I highly recommend. Both the TED Talk and the book explain why companies that sell their stories of why they do what they do have more success than those that simply talk about what they do. Here's some great news. Our brains don't distinguish much between hearing a story of an event and actually experiencing it. That's why we can get so engrossed in a Netflix series. We may even stay up 7 days binge-watching one of our favorite shows. Game of Thrones, anyone? We get invested in these shows, and we feel a need to know what's going to happen. We get a little buzz from the stories we hear, and that activity actually shows up in our brain scans. So yes, Netflix, I would like to watch another episode, and I'll thank you to stop judging me after every single one. Just keep on rolling. No need to ask again. Bye. Did you know our brains actually release dopamine into our system to make us feel good and crave more when we listen to an emotionally charged story? That very same chemical creates a situation where we remember more with greater accuracy. That explains the Netflix binging phenomenon. It's also why we put ourselves through a day of torture after we get hooked into a new book and can't put it down until 4 a.m. It's why I have very real nightmares about whatever scary thing I've just seen on TV or read in the paper. That story becomes my life. So much so that I start to associate all the bad things that are happening around the world or on that show to actually happening to me or the people I love. Let's talk a little bit more about the human brain for a second. There are three main parts to our brain: the rational part, the emotional part, and the instinctive part. If a salesperson starts rattling off facts about what their product can do for you, your rational brain will kick in and process that information. But that's not the part of the brain where decisions on buying are made. So, after you're presented with a bullet point list of features and benefits, you have to access a totally different part of your brain to make a buying decision. Now, let's assume that after the facts and figures, that same salesperson describes the solution to your problem or paints a verbal picture of the value of the product in your life. Your emotional brain will wake up and process the ways that information can meet an emotional need for you. You're getting closer to saying yes at this point, but it still isn't the place where your buying decisions are made. Buying decisions are made in the instinctual part of the brain. When someone describes a situation for you in the form of a story, it's the instinctual part of the brain that gets triggered. You start imagining that story inside your brain and it becomes real to you. It becomes an experience. When we hear a story, we automatically start linking these stories to our own experiences, making them even more real for us personally. Stories are what tie our emotions to the product being sold. This process is called neural coupling. Our brains explode with activity, both when we're telling and hearing a compelling story. If you were to watch the brain activity of a person telling a story and that of the audience, you'd see the same parts of their brains begin to buzz with activity during the story. This is a process called mirroring. You can imagine when someone tells you a story associated with a product they're passionate about, that product will become more personal to you too. That same area of your brain starts to light up, and you're much more likely to buy the product. Our emotions begin to take over the buying process when they're stimulated correctly, and our emotional reactions happen in less than 3 seconds. Seriously, it's that quick. According to Dan Hill, author of Emotionomics, Leveraging Emotions for Business Success, that's 1/5 the time it takes our rational brain to process the same input. And not only is our emotional instinctive response quicker, but our emotional reaction to a stimulus, such as a story, resounds more loudly in our brain than does our rational response, triggering the action to follow. Here's the bottom line. People don't buy products. Instead, they buy feelings, emotions, people, and stories. Your customer will press buy because her gut tells her she can trust you. And she will trust you because she feels you and her are basically alike. So there's no faster way to get to that place with your customer than to tell her your stories. The truth about imperfection. As your business starts to grow, you may start to notice that your customers and followers put you on a pedestal. They'll lift you up as someone to be emulated and followed, which you are, especially if you've built your brand on authenticity. Often they'll start to believe that your life is a version of perfect that they wish they had. They'll start to expect perfection from you, even though you know there's no such thing. It makes sense, then, that you're afraid of getting honest. If you tell stories that reveal that you're not so perfect, will it affect the way your customer sees you? The answer is yes. Telling real stories will change the way the customer sees you. You will destroy the perfect image that people have wrongly assumed about you. You will let them see that you are just like them. You will have problems just as they do. You'll give them the chance to connect to the ways you're alike rather than the ways that you're different. Our imperfections are what bind us together. They allow your customers and those in your tribe to take you off the pedestal and put you in the seat right next to them, where they have the ability to feel like you're equal, where they can be honest with you about their felt needs. When you show your imperfections, you get the chance to build an honest relationship with your customers. My friend Melissa is an extremely successful and amazing entrepreneur. But for the longest time, she let the fact that she didn't have a college degree hold her back from stepping into the role as a strong female leader, a role she had already earned and yet had not owned. At one point, however, Melissa decided to be brave and share this secret shame with her customers and followers. She created a social media post about everything that was holding her back and told her people how she felt about not getting that secondary education. I wish you could have seen the response Melissa got from this raw and authentic post about her insecurity. She received not only messages of support, but also lots of "me too" messages. You guys, she built a tribe that day, a tribe of like-minded people, and she didn't sacrifice her place in her business because she spoke honestly about something that was difficult for her to overcome. That acceptance from her tribe allowed her to step into her role as leader in the entrepreneurship field. That makes sense when you think about it. Ask yourself, would someone being honest about their insecurities make you feel more connected to them or turned off by their imperfection? It's hard though, because when we're the one that has to go first, we worry that people will turn from us because of the truth. The opposite is actually true. So say the thing that matters. Tell people about what troubles you. Express your excitement about your life and your business. Talk about the imperfections. Speak your truth and let the people who can't handle it go. Dare to tell your stories. All of them.